Hey everybody, Paul Boyer here for the Mad Money Machine Show 178 for Sunday, May 30th, Memorial Day weekend, the start of summer 2010, and it's going to be a hot one today. On this show, I want to get into the details of how to construct your permanent portfolio, why you'd want to do that, what are the elements of it, what are some of the details about getting involved in the permanent portfolio, and talk about the year-to-date performance of the lazy portfolios through the end of May, and see how the various portfolios stacked up. I will compare the performance of the lazy portfolios versus their risk over the long term. And then I've got a quote from Harry Brown, which I'll play for you, that he describes the importance of the risk that you might take in these portfolios. I think you'll want to stay tuned and listen to the entire episode, Mad Men Machine Show 178. Out at the madmoneymachine.com website, the lazy portfolio results through May 2010, and these are the year-to-date returns. Now, I'm not showing you in this one table the risk of each of the lazy portfolios because, I don't know how to calculate the annualized risk of just 5 months. All right, I'm not sure it's all that meaningful anyway. But I do show you a long-term look of the same portfolios from the beginning of 1985 through the end of 2009. The spreadsheet I use, Simba's spreadsheet, doesn't have data for the most recent 5 months. It only goes on year-to-year boundaries. But I have in the list 25 different lazy portfolios. Ranging from our old friend IFA Index Portfolio 100 Bright Red, all the way to the simple one index fund, the Vanguard Windsor Fund, and also including, of course, the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio Concept, the actual Permanent Portfolio Fund itself, PRPFX, and the newly named Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio. Or perhaps I should have called it the Mad Money Machine Permanent Portfolio. I don't know how to brand it, right? We'll think about that. Well, through the end of May 2010, of all the various portfolios, the one that had the highest year-to-date performance is, bum-ba-bum, the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio. Oh, you're thinking it's rigged, don't you? Honestly, it isn't. It isn't rigged. It just happens to be that we had a good 5 months. And what is the composition of the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio? Well, it's the same thing as the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio, except for in the stock portion. Instead of just buying the simple Vanguard Total Stock Market Fund, 25%, I split that out in half into the Vanguard Small Cap Value Fund, half of that, and the Vanguard Emerging Markets Funds. Now, in this comparison, I'm using the actual Vanguard mutual funds, but what might be better and slightly better is the exchange-traded fund versions of these components. For example, instead of the Vanguard long-term bond fund, VUSTX, which is used in this table, the exchange traded fund TLT might be a better option. And also the various stock fund components, instead of VISVX for the small cap value, you might look at VBR, the exchange traded fund. Well, what was the performance of the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio year to date? 5.0% for the Vanguard Mutual Fund composition, or 5.4% for the exchange traded funds, followed closely, very closely, by Harry Brown permanent portfolio, up this 5 months 4.8% or 5.2% respectively. Now, the actual permanent portfolio mutual fund, which has expenses and fees and so forth, its year-to-date performance was up 3.3%. And those are the top three performers for the year-to-date. Now, the next one is the Bill Schulthess Coffee House portfolio at Vanguard, portfolio number 11 in my list. And if you go looking on this blog post, all the way down at the bottom, you see the various components of each of the lazy portfolios. This Bill Schulthess Coffee House portfolio at Vanguard has 40% in the total bond market fund, and then 10% each of Vanguard 500, Vanguard Value, Vanguard Total International Stock, Vanguard REIT, Vanguard Small Cap Value, and Vanguard Small Cap. That total went up 2.6% on the 5 months. Which was the worst performer? Well, there's the Dilbert's World's Simplest Portfolio. There's a posting out at the Dilbert website where he talks about what is the simplest portfolio you could construct. And he said in that posting, half total stock market and half emerging market, which don't recommend. Very risky portfolio. And it is also down 3.6% on the 6 months. Other interesting ones, the IFA Index Portfolio 100, according to their own data from IFA.com, IFA Portfolio 100 Bright Red, their riskiest portfolio, up 1.3% in the 5 months. This includes their fees. And the IFA Index Portfolio 50 Bright Red, which is the medium risk portfolio, up 0.4%. Inclusive of their fees. So just below the year-to-date performance, I have included there also the return versus risk chart for all of these portfolios from 85 through 2009. And when you look at this chart, you can see there's definitely a slope from lower right, lower left to upper right. And this is basically defines the boundary called the efficient frontier, of which it is very difficult, if not impossible, to construct a portfolio that is going to be above and to the left of all of these other portfolios. I mean, that's what you'd like to do. You'd like to have a portfolio top left, meaning high return and low risk. Top, high return, left, low risk. As you can see in the chart, the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio is among the lowest risk of all of the portfolios, the actual lowest risk one over those many years, is the Harry Brown permanent portfolio, had a correspondingly lower return. The very highest risk one out there was Portfolio 9, which is, actually I don't have it memorized, it is the Dilbert World's Simplest Portfolio, as you might understand, just those two funds with the very high-risk stock funds. The IFA Portfolio 100 Bright Red is apparent in this graph. It's a red circle, and it shows nice high returns, but with a correspondingly high risk. The IFA Portfolio 50 shows returns equivalent to the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio at just a very slightly higher risk over the long term. Now, the permanent portfolios are the only three of these 25 portfolios that invest in gold. And the Harry Brown and the Paul Boyer both invest 25% in gold. The permanent portfolio fund, PRPFX, also invests in silver and some other things, not quite the full 25% in actual gold. And by the way, the permanent portfolio fund is not shown in these charts because it doesn't go all the way back to 85. And I forgot to put it back in when I went back to the near-term charts, which I'll talk about now. Three charts below this long-term chart. I wanted to look at smaller snapshots of windows in time to see, you know, through how did these portfolios perform over certain specific intervals of time. So, for example, just the previous 10 years, let's look at how stocks did in the lost decade. You remember some folks talk about the S&P 500 from 2000 to 2009 was flat, didn't do anything. Well, all of these portfolios actually had a positive return over those 10 years. And surprise, surprise, the one that had the highest return at 10% was the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio Fund. And the one, the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio Fund actually had a over 7% return and the lowest risk of all the portfolios. So pretty good performance there. The slope, the efficient frontier, is not as evident on this chart. In fact, the slope looks like it's from upper right, upper left to lower right in this chart. The plots are scattered all over the place, as you might expect in a smaller time period. Okay, over the long, long term, the efficient frontier becomes evident. But over short term, you know, we can have swings in things. For example, in the next chart, I look at a bad, bad period for stocks. The beginning of 2007 through the end of 2009. Those three horrible years. And in fact, many of these portfolios show a negative annualized return over those 3 years. This is not cumulative returns. This is not how much it went down total for the 3 years. This is how much it went down each and every year for the 3 years. For example, I don't want to pick on Index Funds Advisors Portfolio 100, but I will describe that it went down just a little over 5% each and every year for those 3 years at a risk of about 25%. The winner in that terrible 3 years for the portfolios is, surprise, surprise, the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio at just about 10% a year gain. At just about 10% annualized standard deviation or risk. The second one is the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio. Now, obviously, this is because gold did well in those years, and the portfolio is made up in large part of gold. Of course, bonds did well in those years, too. So, it's kind of unfair to pick on the year that stocks did poorly. So, I did a chart just below that one of the years when stocks did well. From 2003 through 2006, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's 4 years of returns. And it does indeed show these lazy portfolios did well. IFA Portfolio 100, almost 26% gain each and every year for those 4 years, 2003 through 2006. Who wouldn't love that kind of return? At a higher risk of about 12%. How did the winners of the other charts do, the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio One Portfolio Fund? It went up about 13% a year at a risk of below 4% during the stock's heydays. No portfolio did worse than 9%. The lowest performer during the period was the actual Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio at just a little over 9%, almost 10% per year. Not too bad. At the lowest risk, 3.5% per year. What does this mean about risk, though? I mean, if you were to look at these charts, you want high returns. You don't care about risk. Well, Harry Brown, on his radio program just a little over 5 years ago, talked about why risk is important in the portfolio that you're investing in. And let me just play that for you now.
Now, there are going to be other funds that have a higher yearly return over a long period, but they get that return with what I keep referring to as the roller coaster ride. You have these wide swings where you're up 1 year by 30%, and then the next year you're down 15%, and so on. Whereas if you could look at a graph of the permanent portfolio fund or the kind of personal permanent portfolio that I recommend, what you see is just steady growth year after year after year of a more modest amount. In the case of the personal permanent portfolio, that has gained 9% a year over the last 30 years, and the fund return has been similar with no big losing years at any time. So it's much easier to stay with that kind of a program because you don't get into a period like 2000 to 2002 when the stock market is falling and your favorite mutual fund is doing badly and you think, gosh, I've got to abandon this and do something else, and you drop out of it right at the bottom as it starts to go back up again.
That's kind of what I did with the stock market, as a matter of fact.
Well, it's not the least bit unusual, and that's why stability is just as important as performance, because a lack of stability can cause you to be anxious about it all the time, and secondly, to make poor decisions because the swings in the market affect you, and you can only ride it down so far, so you finally get out of it, and you may get out of it halfway down, or you may get out of it right at the bottom.
So I've talked about the concept of financial freedom, and I think this is one aspect of financial freedom, and that is, if you get into a portfolio that has low volatility, then you don't have to worry about the stock market day to day or month to month. You just have to look at it really once a year, even though I have to admit I look at it daily still. But that's because I'm still not completely invested in the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio. Just have a hard time jumping all into the water. I wish I would have done it back months ago when I said, I'd have a hard time jumping all into this portfolio. But, there it is. Anyway, one of the other things he mentioned in there was, if you look at a chart, he said, of the performance of the permanent portfolio. Now, the chart that he's explaining is the chart that you're more familiar with than the kind of charts I've been showing you. The charts he's talking about is simple performance over time. What is the gain of the portfolio? What is the value of the portfolio over time? And it is true that if you look at these permanent portfolios over the long term, their performance, they just seem to go more steady than the wild up and down swings of the other portfolios. And that's what the risk measures in my charts. As you go to the right on the standard deviation, that means the portfolio is going to swing up and down a lot more violently than one of the lower standard deviation portfolios. And so that means to you, I guess, over the really long term, if you in fact don't look at your portfolio and it's a high-risk portfolio, then, you know, it doesn't make as much emotional difference. But who out there doesn't look at their portfolio? Maybe that's one of the advantages of just, you know, going with index funds advisors, is give them your money, come back in 30 years kind of a thing. But if you're doing it yourself, the low volatility sure helps. Now, one of the things that I might mention too, that you want to look for in your permanent portfolio construction, is how do you break it up into your taxable versus non-taxable accounts. Generally, you want to put things in your IRA or 401k that throw off dividends or highly taxable stuff annually. And of course, that would be the long-term bonds. Bonds do pay coupons, they pay dividends. The TLT fund, for example, pays a monthly dividend. And you know, if you buy actual long-term treasuries, they'll throw off a coupon every 6 months. So you don't want that stuff to be taxed. So you want it in your IRA if you can get it, or in your 401k, even harder to get in many cases. And then I would say in your taxable account might be the best place to put stocks, the stock funds, because they don't pay as much dividends. They pay small amounts of dividends. And the idea is you buy them and you hold them for a long, 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 long time, which means there's no taxable event in those stock funds that you own, other than those small amount of dividends. You might be doing some rebalancing from time to time. Let's say stocks do go wildly up over a course of 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you need to kind of rebalance. Well, you would have to sell some stocks. This would be at a long-term capital gain of, at the moment, 15%. We'll see how long that lasts. But 15% is better than 28%. You might have to pay on a dividend or a short-term capital gain. And, of course, gold itself, the GLD fund, as I understand it, I'm not a tax accountant or anything, but as I understand it, that is deemed a collectible, not a, not a stock type of investment. So no matter how long you hold that and then sell it for gain, I think you have to pay 28% or something like that for the collectible. But do your own research on all those tax implications before you make a decision. Don't trust what I say about it. The cash portion is there to help you with your rebalancing. You'll probably want to keep some cash in both the taxable and non-taxable accounts in that case. So one of the good things about stocks in your taxable account too is when you do buy them, maybe they go down for the first couple of months that you've bought them. I mean, maybe, you know, the bonds go up, but the stocks do, let's say they go down in the time that you bought them. What you might want to consider is tax loss harvesting. So, for example, if you bought the Emerging Markets Exchange Traded Fund, VWO, from Vanguard, let's say it goes down 10% since you bought it. Well, you might want to consider selling it and then immediately, that very minute, buying another emerging markets fund, such as EEM, the iShares Emerging Market Fund. Now, I don't recommend holding that one for the long term because it has a higher expense ratio at, let's see, what was it? The number I use on that is 0.72% compared to Vanguard's, which is just 0.2%. But you could swap out, hold it 31 or 32 days, and then swap back into the Vanguard Emerging Market Fund, VWO. And that keeps your portfolio in the balance that you need, the assets allocated properly in the portfolio. Well, I got a question through Twitter of, Paul, talk about silver. You talked about silver in the past. What do you think about owning silver in your portfolio? And Harry Brown actually talked about this in his shows way back when. He said he was a big fan of silver. He loved silver to death in the 70s. Absolutely just loved it. And silver did miraculously back in the 70s. It went up massive amounts. What was it? From $2 to $50 or something crazy. But he said he now does not recommend owning silver in the permanent portfolio. Your permanent portfolio. Now, maybe your variable portfolio. If you've got some mad money to play with and you think that silver is going to do crazy, then, you know, throw a couple bucks the way of silver. But looking at it statistically, looking at it mathematically, how does silver stack up against gold? Well, I put into Simba's spreadsheet, the one that tracks performance over the long term, gold, and I put in silver. So over the long term, from 1985 through 2009. Actually, I wonder if I have longer term. Let me just go with this one. Maybe I'll revise it in a subsequent show. But over those years, from 85 through 2009, the compound annualized growth rate for gold was 4.755%. And the compound annualized growth rate for silver was less. It was 3.33%. So silver did not do as well as gold annually over those years. And the risk standard deviation of gold was 14%, which is significant in and of itself. But silver's standard deviation or risk was 20.69%. So for silver, over the long term, you had a lower return at higher risk. Now, is that the kind of component you really want? You know, maybe, like I said, in your variable portfolio, you really have a reason to believe that silver is going to go crazy. Maybe this, maybe the fact that there is a shortage of silver in the world and maybe somebody's going to have a short squeeze in silver. Maybe you'd want to buy a little bit. Maybe you think it's going to go up from its current levels of $17, $18, $19 an ounce up to $50 or $100 an ounce someday. So maybe you own a little bit of it. I'd recommend owning some silver coins, some junk silver coins, no matter what you think about silver. But that's the reason why it doesn't fit in the permanent portfolio. Another reason that Harry Brown likes gold is because gold is money. It's the most, I'd have to say it's the best currency in the world. All the other currencies are created by governments, and they can create as much the currency as they want, which creates problems, because when you have politicians in charge of the money, then it's going to be corrupted. And gold, for the most part, politicians aren't in charge of gold. Now, they do probably do some manipulation in the gold market, trying to, set prices and so forth by buying and selling large amounts of it. But over the long term, they can't control the value of gold relative to the massive amounts of currencies that they're creating. Well, speaking of Harry Brown, I would like to have the Harry Brown quote of the month. Now, one of the things that I talked about, I think, in a previous show was we had various bubbles in the past. We had the NASDAQ bubble in the early 2000s, where, you know, people were just throwing money into crazy dot-com stocks, and they went up and up and up. And then in the mid-2000s, we had the real estate bubble, where people were speculating on houses, and prices were going up and up and up and up. Well, what bubble are we in now? Now, it appears we are in a government bubble, where government jobs are growing. I think we saw an ad in the paper, an article where the government wants to hire 270,000 people for mission-critical jobs. 270,000 mission-critical jobs in government? Are you kidding me? That's crazy. Well, Harry Brown's quote is this. He says, "We elect a Republican president and government gets bigger. We elect a Democratic president and government gets bigger. We elect a Democratic Congress or a Republican Congress, and government gets bigger." Well, we're told that the era of big government is over, and government gets bigger. Welfare is reformed, and government gets bigger. We're told that Congress has made tough budget cuts, and government gets bigger. Whatever happens, government just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, so I talked about the performance of the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio year to date. Well, what are each of the different components? How have they done? What makes this portfolio, what made this portfolio go up 5% this year? There are five components to it: the two stock funds, the long-term bond fund, the short-term treasury fund or cash, and the gold fund. The big winner in the entire portfolio was gold. Gold was up 10.8%. This is in the form of GLD, the exchange-traded fund for gold. 10.8% year-to-date. The next best component of this portfolio was the Vanguard Small Cap Value Index, VISVX, which showed a 7.7% gain on the year. Now, interestingly, the Emerging Markets Fund, the other stock component, went down 6.9%. on the year. Now, why is that? Is that because the dollar has such a strong rally? So the dollar is getting stronger compared to currencies in some of these emerging markets? Perhaps that's the reason. The Vanguard Long-Term Treasury Mutual Fund, VUSTX, long-term bonds, how would they have done this year? You think that bonds are a good investment? They went up, that fund went up 7.3% year to date on the year. And of course, cash, you wouldn't expect cash to do much of anything, but the Vanguard Short-Term Treasury Fund, VFISX, actually went up 1.4%. So that's better than a money market fund, or has been better than a money market fund year to date. And you know, when I constructed some of my portfolio, I took a look at my money market funds. I had a lot of in money market funds. And the return on those things is it's zero. Money market funds right now are basically returning zero, nothing. In fact, you're lucky if you're not paying a fee to own the money market fund at this point and getting a negative return on it. Well, I traded some of my money market funds into this SHY, which you know, is the short-term treasury fund. And wanted to, you know, I was kind of leery of doing that because the fund, SHY, has an expense ratio to it of 0.15%. So instead of the money market fund paying, you know, in which I have to pay zero expenses at the moment, they waive their fees, to own this short-term treasury fund, I'd have to pay 0.15% a year. Well, so I was leery of doing that, but the good news is the fund does pay a monthly dividend, and it actually has a gain in the actual price of the fund since I bought it. So I'm showing a total gain of in the time since I bought it, which is not year to date, I am showing about a 0.5% gain in that short-term treasury since I bought it, which is, I think, less than year to date. So pretty good, pretty good, pretty good. Now, how do you buy long-term bonds? The simplest way, and for small amounts of money, might be to look at that TLT, exchange-traded fund. So you need a brokerage account, and you need to put some money in the brokerage account, and then you need to put in a buy order. You know, you can put in a market order if you trust the brokerage account, or you can put in a limit order if you don't necessarily trust the broker to get you the best deal. But TLT is a very liquid bond fund, and if you're buying into that, you could probably put in a market order, feel pretty confident about it. It has a pretty low expense ratio, also of 0.15%. Like I mentioned, that does pay a monthly dividend. So you'll want to make sure, if you're looking at past performance charts of TLT, that you do include the dividend that it pays out monthly. So, you know, you can go to Yahoo finance.yahoo.com, bring up the quote for it, and then look at the adjusted historical prices, which take into account the dividends paid by that fund. But you can also buy the actual long-term bond. You can go to your broker. You can go into either the auction market or the secondary market to buy the government long-term bond. Now, these bonds are $1,000 bonds, basically. So you buy one bond, you're buying $1,000 worth of bond. You're buying a $1,000 bond. You're giving the government a $1,000 loan. So let me go through Crawling Road, Craig R.'s description of the... some frequently asked questions about bonds. Now, there are a couple of Harry Brown radio shows that discuss some of the topics about bonds. Craig has links to that. I'll have links to this FAQ. But why would you want to own bonds? Bonds, well, they help out under various economic conditions to protect the permanent portfolio. In times of prosperity, when the economy is stable and growing, bonds provide a steady income stream in addition to the growth of stocks. When markets go through deflationary gyrations that are bad for stocks and gold, well, bonds can go up greatly in price, offsetting losses in these other assets. And you know what? Even with interest rates as low as they are, I mean, these 30-year bonds are now something just above 4%, rates can still go down. Rates could go down to 2%, maybe, on long-term bonds. And the capital gain in your actual bond ownership would go up greatly in that case. Well, what kind of bonds should you own? You want to own only the highest quality long-term bonds that you can buy. For U.S. investors, that means you only want to purchase U.S. Treasury long-term bonds because they have no credit risk, no default risk, or no call risk. And you can read more about what those various risks are. So when you say long-term bonds, what do you mean? Well, any bond duration held to maturity of 25 to 30 years. I'll have more to say about bonds in an upcoming episode. I think I've reached the time limit for this show, quite frankly, for right now. So I want to thank you for listening. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes a look at the past and a look at the future to make a Mad Money Machine. You can reach me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can call me 571-366-7121. You can see me at Twitter, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. And yeah, there's a Facebook page out there probably too. Thanks so much for listening. Best of luck to you. Have a happy summer. See ya when I got something else to say.